AFM 100.3. This is Searchlight, the entrepreneur's journey with Sharon and John.
And we are back. Monday night. Gosh, hasn't this year gone by so fast?
It goes faster every time. What's going on here? I mean, it's like you're going forward too fast. Slow down. We're going too fast.
I know. We're nearly into October and our 30th birthday celebrations, which are huge. More details on that a little bit later. John, welcome back.
Thank you.
Searchlight, the entrepreneur's journey, and tonight we're talking about a really interesting subject of pitching. And valuation,
yes. We're going to discuss the elephant in the room, by the way. Because whenever you have a pitch, it happens every time you sit in a pitch. It's like, what's the valuation going to be? And how do you deal with the valuation? And how is the founder, usually the founder doing the pitch, going to deal with this thorny issue of valuation?
So it's a scary thing.
Yeah, but it's scary, but it's interesting because there are several schools of thought about how this should be approached. And one of them is actually deal with it by just deleting it completely and not dealing with it at all.
Which is the general rule of thumb.
Is it really? I'm not so sure about that. You know, I mean, it's sometimes the problem with that approach is the first question you're going to get asked is, well, what's the valuation? So my view is you might as well deal with it up front. But, I mean, that's a matter of technique and it's a matter about where you are in the process and that sort of thing. But there is also the overall thing about if you're going to put out a valuation, what do you put out? You know, and there's those kinds of issues.
But, and how do you value it?
And there's a whole... Now, this program is, in a way, a follow-on from our March program when we talked about how to get money from angel investors. And I think I said as a throwaway line in that program, we could do a whole program about valuation. And yes, we could, but that would be extremely boring. I mean, I might find it interesting, but it would be otherwise quite boring. So we're not just going to look at valuation. We're actually going to look at the whole issue about what should you have in your pitch. So, yes, we're going to spend a bit of time talking about valuation, but more generally we're going to say if you're putting a pitch together, what are the key things that really need to be in there, and maybe what are one or two things you really shouldn't have in there, you know, because by default maybe there are some things that shouldn't be. So, hey, that's what we're going to try and have a go at drilling into this evening. And we're going to be joined by some people who really know what they're talking about on this stuff. We're going to have Dr. Chris Booth, who's an investment partner at 42 Ventures, has been doing this stuff for longer than I have. That's saying something. He's been doing a lot of work in this area, a lot of work with early stage startups, and he's possibly even seen more pitches than me over the years.
But gosh,
I know, it's amazing. It's true. We'll see. All right. We're also joined by Simon Horn, who is the founder and CEO of Angel Loop. Simon's probably seen even more pitches than Chris and I put together, frankly. But Simon's running Angel Loop, which is about connecting founders to angel groups. And Simon will tell us all a little bit about that later. And we're also going to get the view from the other side of the pitch deck. We're going to have Stephanie Boffinger, who is the founder and CEO of FemPro Armor. And she's going to be telling us, she's going through this process at the moment.
Ooh, scary stuff.
So she's going to tell us, you know, what it's like from the side of delivering this kind of thing and tell us a bit about her entrepreneur's journey as well.
That's fantastic.
That's what we've got coming up.
This is a really good follow-on. If you're following any of the podcasts, and if you're not and you want to go back and listen to a couple of years of amazing information about the whole startup world, go and check out bayfm.org.au or
you can go to www.entrepreneursjourney.net.au. Just scroll down the page and you'll see the whole list of all the previous programs
there. And there's so many programs there covering absolutely everything, including we had Simon here a couple of times doing live pitches. And if you have a listen to those and then have a listen to this program, you can see for yourself what works, what doesn't work. And if you're putting your own pitch together, then take some very, very valuable hints. But our last program was 3 weeks ago, and on that program we had, yes, the Youth Entrepreneur Summit, and we had Tioni, and we had Taj, and we had Siobhan. It was an amazing program. John and I ended up going off to the Yes Summit on the Wednesday at RPAC, And it was fantastic, wasn't
yeah,
it,
yeah, we popped along and they were doing some fantastic stuff there and had some really inspiring speakers and were getting the youngsters really excited about the whole idea of being able to embrace the possibility of entrepreneurship as a viable career option.
This is school kids.
Yeah.
This is so exciting. We didn't get to stay for the entire day, unfortunately, but it really would have been fantastic to see what kind of businesses, because they had to work on a business proposition, what kind of businesses they came up with that day. I think we might have to do a follow-up.
I think we'll do a follow-up. As I'm sure there was some fascinating stuff. We were there a bit earlier in the day when they were doing the lead into that stuff, and it looked like they were doing a fantastic job of that. So hats off to Taj and to Tioni for putting that all together. It looked like a really great and interesting
yeah,
day.
So if you hear of Yes Again, the Youth Entrepreneur Summit, make sure you get your kids, your grandkids, your nieces, nephews, cousins, whatever, get them along to it. It was such a high energy, value packed day. Even had our own local shark from the Shark Tank, Steve Baxter, going along. So he would have imparted amazing information. So if you do get the chance, get them along to, yes, the Youth Entrepreneur Summit. In the meantime, let's take a quick break. This is Bay FM 100.3 Searchlight, the Entrepreneur's Journey.
Station sponsor.
Bay FM 100.3, this is Searchlight and the Entrepreneur's Journey. And tonight we are talking about pitching and valuations and what you actually need to have in your pitch deck. So, John.
Right, and our first guest this evening is Dr. Chris Booth. Chris has a long-standing background in assisting and advising early-stage ventures. He is investment partner at 42 Ventures, a boutique investment firm that started off life as the investment arm of the Gold Coast Innovation Hub. Chris also acts as an advisor to a range of high-growth early-stage businesses in Europe and Southeast Asia, as well as been actively involved in local angel investment groups, including Brisbane Angels and Redlands Angels. Ta-da and hurrah. Chris, good evening. Welcome.
Thank you, John.
Thanks for coming along. You and I together have sat through quite a few pitches over the years, and there's always interesting things to say about most of the pitches that we've seen. Mm. But often that elephant in the room topic of valuation crops up. I alluded earlier to the different schools of thought on maybe how founders should deal with that. What's your view on how to handle the valuation issue in a pitch?
I would say the very easiest way to deal with it is don't shy away. Put something out there. I mean, you certainly need to put out there how much you're expecting to get through to the next round, to take the business forward from where you are now, and to have an open conversation with investors, because the value of anything is always what can be agreed on between two people. But if you're putting a number out there as a starting point, that actually helps the whole conversation start and flow.
That's kind of my view too. Because I take the view that, you know, sometimes you're in a pitch and the valuation is sort of just glossed over and it's like, okay, we'll talk about that later. But inevitably, then it's almost the first question that gets asked, you know, often me asking it, okay, so what's the valuation, you know? The counter school of thought is, well, it doesn't matter at that stage because really the pitch is just the opening part of a conversation and a dialogue, and that's all going to get uncovered in a due diligence process and that sort of thing. And I kind of see the point of that, but I don't hold with it. I mean, do you get the contra view?
Look, I can see why an entrepreneur might want to not stipulate something. I mean, in any negotiation, as you're just saying, this is the start of a conversation around a negotiation. I mean, in any negotiation, usually it's the person who it's seen to be the person who says the first number is on a hiding to nothing from the outset. Whereas, I mean, in the scope of angel groups, in VC land, in the innovation ecosystem, you will always, and as you alluded to in the opening comments, there are always different schools of thought on what a valuation should be. What an entrepreneur will usually do is, oh, we reckon it's going to be this one that we like the best. Mm-hmm. And I've been told
lots
by this group,
money.
Oh yeah, give me money, and I won't give you much equity for it. As in, they're looking to maximise what they keep for the money that gets put into their business. What was the question again?
What your view was on the contra view, which is don't mention the valuation. But I think we know what your view is.
It's so, exactly
yeah,
right.
Yeah, we know that sort of thing. So just Just give us a bit more of a little bit about your background and what's led you to what you're doing now and all that kind of stuff. Just give
Interesting version, version.
Let us hear your entrepreneur's journey story. Let's hear.
Oh, gee, I grew up around family business and not a very entrepreneurial father, doing tourist boats, hotels, hotelier, publican, and the family had a number of different businesses. I quite enjoyed science. I went and did science. I was working at the lab bench and going, why am I doing science? I mean, I enjoy it, but there's so much more to life. And the wonderful Premier of Queensland, Peter Beattie, was up there going, biotech, biotech, biotech. And so I went and found out more, got involved in startup biotech projects, and worked at the tech transfer office at University of Queensland, UniQuest, where I was doing pretty much anything but life sciences. I was happier than a pig in mud. I was getting all the different faculty managers coming with, oh, look, here's this computer program for translating Sanskrit writings in Bali. Oh, okay, that sounds like a junket, but sure, why not? That kind of stuff. Through to worked and started doing, as you said, doctoral thesis on venture capital investment into the life sciences. Went into interview one financier in Brisbane and walked out with a new job. Started running angel groups, was doing venture capital deals, early stage investment banking, helping companies get the money they needed to go to that next stage of growth. And indeed, John, if I remember correctly, that's when I first met you.
That's true. Let's not say how long ago that was.
No, let's not. But from quite formative times for both of us, I think.
So that was the background. Today, though, 42 Ventures, which was a spin out of the Gold Coast Innovation Hub.
So that was started up by Danny Ma as the investment arm of the Gold Coast Innovation Hub, the GC Hub. And Danny and our next guest, or one of our soon-to-be guests, Simon Horn, were talking about these high-growth, angel-backed companies coming through that were just not getting far enough for the venture capitalists in Australia to actually back them, to actually put the money in that was required to go to the next levels. Now, we could spend a pretty dry couple of hours talking about the state of venture capital in Australia. There is a lot of money there. But again, just like in Silicon Valley or other hubs and hotspots, you really need to have the right direction to get into that. And look, all sorts of other discussions about the place for early crowdsourced equity funding versus angel groups versus private family offices and other private investors being shown deals where they don't necessarily have the savvy for the particular stage of investment. All sorts of different aspects to all that.
We tend to focus on angel investing because, well, I guess that's my background, and we have Redlands Angels that we support locally. But there are, it should be said, there are other options open to founders in terms of getting that early stage funding.
Yeah, absolutely. And certainly those were being tapped quite substantially through till earlier this year, where, of course, the global economies have changed a bit.
That's an interesting point. I mean, do you seriously think the options are now less than they were a year ago, say?
Oh, for early-stage entrepreneurs? Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
I mean, certainly, I wouldn't quite say it's a flight to safety in the other less focused early stage investors, such as your family offices and other high net worth individuals who don't have a background in, like you and I do, early stage investment. They just may have seen a deal, they may have had someone come to them and say, hey, I've got this great idea, or I've got this business that I'm building up, would you like to put some money in?
There's a range of investment houses that have sort of skirted around this area, have got a little bit involved in it, sometimes got burnt, sometimes done well, and have flirted with it. But I think it's the core of that has often been, it often, that very early first stage, that I need that initial or seed plus rounds, have really tended to come from the angel investment section as opposed to the venture capital.
That's right. And look, what you would have seen in the last 10 years with the cheap money in the global markets was that people with private investors were looking for yield. meaning they were looking for high growth opportunities that were going to give them something more than if they stuck it in a term bond or whatever.
Mm.
What they didn't have was the background in actually gaining value out of the early stage like angels do.
Mm. Okay. Why is it you think angels have done quite well in that particular sector?
Discipline.
Mm. Okay.
So when you look at these any kind of investment, the older maxim is you make your profit when you buy, meaning make sure you get a valuation that takes into account what your exit's going to be in whatever time frame. So angel investors and the more savvy, less venture capitalists are looking at what is actually a fair value for the expected time to exit with the expected exit amount for the deal as it's standing in front of them now.
That's a key point. I think we're going to come to that in a little more detail a little bit later, but I think that's one of the things I have, I think, somewhere. I brought along my list of 20 common pitch fails, which, to maybe talk about a bit later.
Looking forward to
it. But one of those is asking for the money, asking for tomorrow's valuation today. And it's a common error that you see made. And so often, a founder will stand up in the pitch, give their valuation, and then we pick ourselves up off the floor and go, oh, really? Wow. And we go, where did you get that valuation from? And so often the answer comes back, we went to our accountants and they did a report for us. Yeah. Which, and no disrespect to my accountant friends, I hasten to add. I mean, yeah, that's one way of doing it. But there is more than just those traditional methods of discounted cash flow, net present value, all of those kinds of things that an accountant will tend to deploy. I mean, angels will look at that as well, but there's a little bit more to it than that, isn't there?
Oh, absolutely. And I think if we're going to be talking about valuation as in the dollar figure in a deal for an investee company, you've also got to be looking at the investor. Who do you have sitting across from you? Do you have a savvy investor who knows this space, who actually has their own contacts and networks to leverage in your company when you're raising capital? As a private individual, whereas they're a venture capitalist who's looking to just get a deal, package it up and flog it off on the IPO market as soon as they can. What is the value that's being brought to your company over and above the cash as well?
So that's the sort of smart money versus so-called dumb money valuation. Although to some extent, I think any money is good money.
Yeah. Yeah.
Explain again smart and dumb money.
I think it's what Chris was just alluding to. It's where an investor comes and is making an investment in terms of an amount of cash, but is also delivering a value add in terms of advice, mentoring, support, introductions to networks, knowledge, skills, the additional value add that often isn't written in a contract. You know, it's not a black and white thing. I mean, you may be part of an advisory board, you may on occasions become a board member, in which case you have an obligation, you have a fiduciary duty to the business. But often angel investors don't really have that. They're putting the money in, they're getting shares, but then they're saying, yeah, but I can help you, I can introduce you to my contacts here, I can assist you with that, or I've got experience in this, let me advise you on this, that sort of thing. That's the real value add, and that's kind of where the term angel investing, I think, originally came from. Simon will no doubt know, we'll come to Simon later, he'll tell us where it all came from. But it emanated from the idea that there was more than just money coming. It was like you can also be the guardian angel type role as well, in terms of looking after the founder and the business in a more general sense, in addition to making a capital investment in the expectation of a capital return. Sorry, that was a very long-winded answer to the question. But yeah.
No, but it explains it.
Yeah.
So if someone's got an idea and they're thinking, oh gosh, what's my next step? There's a whole bunch of terminology within the startup world that you kind of go, what?
Yes, and if during the course of the evening we start rattling out terminology that you're not familiar with, feel free to drop us a note on the text line and we'll see if we can deal with it.
Because yeah, you can.
There's a huge risk of that. Send us a text on
0468 861003. 0468 1003. Send us a text anytime.
So if you hear too many TLAs, then that's what you've got to do.
Pardon?
Three-letter acronyms.
And there's another one.
Absolutely. That's it. Fantastic. Chris, thanks for that initial oversight. We'll come back to you a little later on because there are a few issues we've started to touch on there that I'd like us to drill into a little bit as we go through this evening.
And what we've spoken about even so far, all of that, the basis of that comes down to having a good pitch and a good pitch deck, which includes all of the information, including valuations. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Bay FM 100.3. NXS, Nikki tonight. Searchlight. The Entrepreneur's Journey. You're one of my kind. In excess. You're one of my kind, need you tonight. This is Bay FM 100.3, Searchlight and The Entrepreneur's Journey. And if you've just joined us, hey, welcome along. We're talking about pitches tonight, what the elements are that are required for a good pitch, and also talking about the elephant in the room.
Valuation.
You sounded like...
Actually, I'll do it lower. It's a big elephant in the room. Valuation.
Now, you actually sounded like a dialect.
Did I?
Yeah, from Doctor Who. Valuation.
Not like a Dalek.
Valuation.
No, where are we going? What are we doing? No. Get serious. This is going to be a serious show. Come on.
No, you can have fun with startups. You can absolutely have fun. But we're talking about, you know, the money side of things and how to get some decent money. So we want to get you putting together a decent pitch. So we've just heard from Chris. John, who's next?
So I'm just trying to get the image of a Dalek standing in a pitch going, what is your valuation?
One of these days I'm going to turn up with a Dalek suit into the angels.
That's the great thing about radio. The pictures are so good. Anyway, our next guest is Simon Horn, who is the founder and CEO of Angel Loop. Simon is an angel investor and he works with Angel Loop, which has now grown into 17 groups across Queensland and New South Wales. Actually, maybe more than 17.
And Victoria now.
Victoria now. Okay, here we go. So previously he had 15 years of international entrepreneurial experience, having started a number of businesses in Asia and more recently in the US. The most successful was Silicon Valley startup Blue Jeans, where he joined as employee number one and helped formulate the idea, assisted in getting the initial funding, and was part of the foundation team in 2009-2010. Blue Jeans exited to VeriZion in June 2020 for lots of millions of dollars, it says here.
Yeah,
is that right? Or was it lots of millions of dollars?
It's Verizon and it was
lots of millions of dollars. Let's go. Simon, welcome. Good to have you back. We're delighted to have you been on a few of our shows and some of the pitch programs.
Yeah, how's the last couple?
You were setting up angel groups in Victoria or something.
Yeah,
like
I was
that,
actually in Bendigo the last radio show.
Right.
So I couldn't, unfortunately couldn't make it.
Okay. But, we can feeble excuse, but we'll let you off this time. Welcome back though. Good to have you back. This whole issue of value, I mean, you're going to have an opinion on this in terms, because you see all these early stage pitches and do all these pre-screening.
Oh, I probably see 100 pitches a year.
So you will see the whole gambit of the how to deal with the valuation thing.
Absolutely. And, certainly from... certainly from our perspective is I generally look at, I know what's going to bomb and what's going to go fly. Mm. So if you pitch a valuation too high, people get fixated about that valuation. I mean, Chris talks about it as a good starting point, but it's got to be a realistic starting point to really capture the crowd. So generally what we do is, and as you're probably aware, you've been part of some of our pitch clinics that we've done before in Brisbane, is we usually take the entrepreneur aside and I say, hey, look, I know you love your business, you love your valuation, but I'm going to give you a bit of guidance. You know, the best chance you're going to have is this valuation, because I've seen it. I've seen all come through the door. I know it works and what doesn't work. And generally what happens is that's just a guidance. And if the entrepreneur says to me, no, I'm very confident about the valuation, I'm really very confident about this valuation, I'll say, look, well, you know, I've warned you. I've said my piece. And if you want to pitch that valuation, then good luck to you. And unfortunately, particularly over the last 6 months, we've lost a lot of good deals because of founders holding on to valuations that were just unrealistic to investors.
So, how I'm still a little mystified as to how that kind of happens. I get that a founder would come in with fantastic ideas about what they can do with their business, and, you know, they have the famous hockey stick graph where, yeah, it's going to go down a bit, but then it's going to go great. And then they base a valuation on some future mystical, as yet unproven number. And they get hung up about that. And I kind of go, yeah, but you're asking for money today, and we're not at that point yet.
Exactly.
And we've got to get to that point. But they still go, they get this sort of, I call it sort of, it's sort of valuation myopia. It's like, I must get this valuation. You know, they've got a business that maybe isn't even revenue positive yet, hasn't actually taken a buck. And they're putting $10 million valuations on it, you know. And of course, we just go, don't be silly. What in your opinion causes a founder to go in with that kind of approach?
There is a lot of experts on valuations out there. as I said, you know, and as you probably well know, there's your accountant, the classic accountant, and there's also, you know, people go on the internet and see the prices in the US, so they see the prices around and say, oh, that's what, you know, people are investing at. Mm. But the reality is that our market is a very, very tough market. It's a very hard market for early stage investment. If you want early stage investment, you have to work for it. And I mean, we run roadshows, and I know Stephanie who'll be joining us shortly. We've done a roadshow with me to Rockhampton. But it's very hard to raise early stage capital, and it's very rare, and you've got to work for it. And so, you know, as the angel who takes some people on road trips around the place to help them raise money, it's important to understand what the expectation of that crowd is. And as Chris said, it's what the market is willing to pay at that time. And I think there's a lot of pressure, specifically in the last 6 months, with businesses who are scaling now that we would consider outside angels, are being forced back to a lower valuation to raise money, simply because the speculative money, or the as Chris pointed, has left the market. The punters, would say, and so it's coming back and putting downward pressure on valuations. And I think that you know, taking advice on what your valuation should be is probably a good way to do it. We're not here to fleece people. We're not here to take advantage of. We're here to help you. You know, we're here to help the founders to achieve what they need to achieve. So instead of saying, look, I want $1 million at $5 million valuation, maybe think about staging your investment, because it's all about your ability to execute and your ability to trust. So if you're a first time founder and you want $1 million and you're asking $5 million valuation, I would say to you, look, how about you think about taking a smaller amount now? See what you can do with it in the next 12 months. See how much traction you can make with it. And I can guarantee you, if you meet your numbers next time, you'll certainly get the next round of valuation. So we're sort of saying to them, stage it out. Don't be so hung up on the valuation, because you actually have to prove that, one, that you actually have a business that makes money, that actually, two, you have customers, and three, you have a growth curve. Mm. Because when you're at the seed level, you just, all we've got is your word of mouth and your idea that, hey, yes, I think this is a great idea. Then that makes it very hard for us to make that decision and judgment.
Okay, so just for the purposes of getting total clarity on this, and for the benefit of any of those who haven't been through this process yet, if you've got an idea and you've put the whole plan together and you think you're going to need, let's say, $1 million to execute that plan, that's the funding that you're going to require. Then part of that process is, right, I need $1 million. The issue then is, how much of your equity are you prepared to offer to external investors in return for that $1 million? And if you want to give away, let's keep the numbers really simple. If, let's say, you're prepared to give away 20% of your equity, that would mean you'd be valuing the business at $5 million. That's a pre-money valuation, very simplistic, but that's kind of how it works, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah.
So what you do is you come in and you say, look, let's give a much smaller amount initially. Let's say instead of raising the $1 million, we come in and raise $150,000, $200,000, which will get you to the next stage. So think about the stage of the growth of your business and when you need the capital, need the capital, and stage out the capital raise. So the first raise you'd raise, you know, maybe $150,000 or $200,000 at 1.5 to 2 million, somewhere around about that. Prove your track record. Second raise, you'd raise slightly more than that, and then the third raise, you might think about a much higher value. So effectively, you give them away 20%, but your valuation at the end is actually a lot higher, and you come out a lot higher. The angel investors have backed you at least twice. you know, and then and you've got track record and you've got valuation and your business is going to be in a strong position, rather than trying to raise at $5 million and then try and use that money and, you know, get to that value in the future.
Yeah, so what you're basically saying is, rather than take $1 million out of one big, you know, big chunk, you break that down into smaller chunks and you go, okay, make bite-sized pieces, yeah, and go, we'll just take, you know, 200,000 first, then 300,000, and then maybe $500,000. But obviously the first batch of that is going to be at a lower valuation because that's higher risk money. The middle one will be a middling valuation because hopefully you've said you've done everything you would do with the first batch of money, and then the final batch of money will be at a lower valuation, will be at a much better valuation from your perspective, because hopefully you've done everything you've done said you were going to do with the first two.
Exactly, and we've seen some really amazing results when people they take that approach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
we've got some amazing founders. I've been on the radio show here before where they've taken that approach because the first dollar is the hardest. The first dollar in specifically if you're a first time founder, if you've never done a startup before, this is your first time, it's very hard to raise that first dollar. I call it two problems, first dollar and first customer. But the first dollar is really hard to get. And if you can get that at a whatever the valuation be, and you can prove you can use that money to an investor that you can achieve what you say you're going to achieve, you can guarantee that you're on a great path and you're going to get the money you need into the future. And we've got a number of startups who've done that.
From the founder's point of view, could it be almost deer in headlights situation? They're just looking at the enormity of the task ahead of creating, say some SaaS software, and they're looking at, oh my goodness, it's going to cost so much for the developers and the marketing and the staff and all of that. And maybe that's where they're coming from. It's like, oh, I'm going to need $1 million to put all of this together just to get it off the ground. Is that potentially where they're coming from?
Yeah, I think so. There's a lot of people get wrapped up in valuations. I think a lot of founders get wrapped up in valuations. We recently had a founder who came to me and said, my value of my business is $6 million. And I said, well, if you pitch at $6 million, you're not going to get much interest. I'm just going to be honest with you. And he said, if you come in at a valuation of $3 million, I think you'll raise the money you'll need. And she didn't listen to the advice, and she went out to the market, and I pitched her everywhere at $6 million. Not very much interest. And she comes back, and I said, and the people that were interested said $3 million, which is what I originally told her. And she got really upset because she didn't get the money that she was actually looking for, because she wanted a bigger amount of money. And so it's got to be, you've got to pitch it to the market's expectation. And you only get one shot at this. I mean, when you go to pitch to an angel group, you get one shot. You know, if you're not on the mark, you won't get the money you need. And part of that is you've got to have a great pitch, you've got to tell a great story, and you've got to have the right valuation to back that up. And if you get all three together, you will almost certainly raise money. And that's something that I have learned more than anything else in the last 3 years driving around all over the countryside, was the fact is that if you don't get those three features together, you will raise money.
Can I ask a question? What happened to the founder that pitched at six, didn't get the funding? Did she find it in another way or readjust the valuation?
No, she shut her business down.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
That's how important tonight is. So if you've got a great idea and you want to take it somewhere, these guys are absolute experts. Take their advice on board. And, you know, if you can get into the angel groups and you get this amazing mentoring, listen. Good advice.
I'd hope so.
I can say that John is probably one of the leading mentors, and if you ever have a chat with John is a world of expertise.
That's very kind of you. The check's in the post. we've done a number. We do some of the pitching mentoring sessions that we do. Well, we do one tomorrow as it happens, and yeah, so yeah, we sit through a number of these things. But I want to come back to a point you alluded to earlier, which I think is actually really important, and one which we see time and time again. And it's a bit of a, I think it's a real conundrum for founders. Which comes first, the first investment dollar or the first customer dollar?
Well, we'd hope the first customer dollar. Mm. As we'd say, you've got to be threatening to make money. As one great angel investor told me, that's the point where you become investable, is when you're threatening to make money, where someone's threatening to buy your product or have made your first sale. So it's really important. And the first sale isn't about the first sale. It's about validating your product market fit.
Mm.
You come up with an idea and you think it's fantastic, but you've got to get a customer to buy that product. And it's one thing inventing it, and the other thing is getting the customer to buy it. And the biggest problem that we have, particularly in Australia, is nobody wants to be the first customer. Because every time you go and talk to somebody, they say, well, who else has bought it?
Mm.
You know, and you come up with this conundrum, which I find it very, I still don't have the answer of how to get your first customer, but people find different ways of doing that through close relationships. It's about building trust. It's about doing a whole lot of things. But that first customer is always the hardest. And if you've got the first dollar, then it becomes the first investment becomes easier. And then it becomes just easier and easier as you go along.
But that's also where this concept of this, another three-letter acronym, the concept of the MVP comes in, the minimum viable product. So the idea being, test your product concept, test the idea, test the viability of people wanting to buy it with the absolute base minimum you can kind of get away with selling somebody, yeah?
Yes, exactly.
The idea is minimum viable product. It's got to be minimum, it's still got to be viable, and it doesn't have to be a product or service or whatever it is you're selling, but get a minimum version of that into the hands of a paying customer, and that is massive proof of that you're doing something right, because the acid test of all of this is, will someone somewhere pay for it? Yeah. And if you've done that, then you are streets ahead of anybody who hasn't done that. Yeah. Yes.
True. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. And, and quite often the MVP doesn't have to be fantastic. We've had founders come to us with MVP that's, you know, half tech, half in the background running around, you know, stitching the pieces together, you know, sticky tape and cardboard or whatever,
the thing that looks really automated, but actually there's somebody frenetically doing stuff in the background.
Yes, exactly. Like, you know,
yeah, that's fine. That's
but,
okay.
But
yeah.
as long as you prove the concept, and that's your first starting point. If you get a customer to pay for that, then you're definitely on the way to success in a business.
And just taking, again, linking it to something else that was alluded to, you alluded to earlier, and Chris alluded to it, is that some aspects of the investment market have maybe gone away a little bit at the higher end. So we've got now people who might be looking for second stage or third stage investments are now coming back to angel groups where they may previously have gone to VCs. So they will, by default, have already had their market fit proof. They will have customers, they will have revenue. So they're coming into this mix as well. And if you're if you're looking for money and you've got a product and business proposition that hasn't yet sold its first one to a customer, it's all you put the two side by side, it's going to be, which am I going to invest in, one that's got proven customers or one that's not got proven customers? Which are you more likely to choose, I suspect?
Yes, yeah. Exactly. That's exactly the issue that came up when Danny Maher and myself, the GC Hub and 42 Ventures came about. Danny and I both sat down and said, you know, we've been backing these angel investors for grand investments for a long time, and there just wasn't the follow-on capital coming from the VCs anymore. So they were coming back to me and saying, Simon, can you help us? Can you help us? Can you help us? And I'm saying, well, you're all grown up now. You don't need angels. Why are you coming back to us? And says, there's no follow-on. There's no growth capital.
Mm.
And so I was having a beer with Danny Maher down the Gold Coast. So 42 Ventures essentially is a not-for-profit venture capital. Really novel idea. But the idea is that we're not there to – we're just there to tap into a different market that may not have been angels, investors and stuff, more like family offices and so forth to get access. But to find that capital that is just that second or third round. And particularly, you know, we're finding, I mean, you know, we're dealing with it every day at the moment, I think, Chris and I, with startups that are coming back down to angels, which shouldn't really be there. They should be further on.
Mm.
And that's putting a lot of pressure on the early stage businesses. So that pushes down all the valuations down. And so this is why it's really important to think about, especially if you're a first-time founder, listen to, you know, the advice we give you, because even though maybe 12, 18 months ago you might have got away with a high valuation from a novice first-time investor, they're no longer there. And what often happens is when you've gone and got money from them, and then you come back to me, and they say to you, and they say to me, I raised my first money at $7.5 million. I said, I didn't have any customers. And I'm sort of, and this actually happened to me. And mm-hmm. I said, I can't help you because I'm going to offer you three. And they're going to go, no, what do you mean? I says, well, I think you took valuation too high the first time around. And that actually is just as bad. You know, it's really hard
to
have
that. It's not a good place to be.
It's not a good conversation to have with the founders. Say, look, your first investor is now going to take a bath, you know, because of not being novice and not understanding the market. So it's really important that for founders to understand that we're there to help, but we've got to realistically giving you numbers that we know that you're going to be able to raise at with confidence and knowing that you can grow your business.
Yeah. So the technical term for that situation is doing a down round, I think.
Yes, doing a down round. That's a jargony word.
That's a jargony word again. Yes. Sorry.
Well, it's called...
But that's bad news because it means the people who went in first are getting their share. The value of their shares has been diminished, and that's...
Just kind of like the stock market, though.
Yeah, but it'll usually be a much higher percentage than a few points loss on the ASX. You know, we're talking about it could be half the value or less, you know, on some of these things. So that's why taking the longer view of these things always works from both perspectives, which is that getting a great early valuation looks great up front if you're able to get that good investment. But if you do need them to go back for a further round, if the first round was massively overvalued, it's going to be very hard to do the second deal because you're going to have a very unhappy first investor, and you're going to have second stage investors who've got massive doubts because the wisdom of doing that wasn't really taken into account at the time it was done.
And a very unhappy founder.
But there's a flip side to that, which is, and this may sound odd coming from somebody who does a bit of this sort of angel investing, is the flip side of that from the investor's point of view is, for example, I don't like to see founders overly diluted too early in these situations. So I've seen situations where a founder's come in, they've done the first couple of rounds, and suddenly they're down to maybe only 50% of the business or something like that because they've given away too much too early. And from an investor's perspective, that's equally not terribly interesting because we actually want the founders to be really involved and have a significant percentage so that they remain really engaged and interested. So there's a path that has to be trodden between not overvaluing and not undervaluing it. You know, if you go too far the other way, you're going to wind up with founders who've not been treated equitably. It's one of my pet hates is seeing founders who've not been treated equitably and have been ridden out of their business at incorrect valuations. So, yeah, there's a path to be trodden there. Would you agree with that?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah,
I think that the reality is that sometimes when you come, like I see them, I'm usually the front door when you come to see angels. When you come to see Angel Loops or Angels, I'm usually the guy at the front door, and we always have that conversation. We sit down, we have a coffee, and we talk about the business, and we talk about, okay, what did you raise and what value? And you find that even a number of businesses where they've just taken too much money too early at too low a valuation can be just as damaging as taking money at too high a valuation. And our role is to try and help them, get them back on track.
And there's a lot of getting on track needed sometimes.
Oh, yeah, a lot of track sometimes, yes.
We'll come to more of those things. We focus a lot on valuation at this stage. We'll broaden the conversation in a little while out to other issues about, you know, what has to be involved in the pitch and that sort of thing. But I think those are important points to cover because it's a case of balance in a lot of these things. But Simon, thanks for that. That's fantastic. I think it's time to take a quick break. You're listening to Searchlight Entrepreneur's Journey on Bay FM 100.3, the heart and the soul of the Bay.
Broadcasting live today from...
Some advice for first-time founders. Take it easy. This is Bay FM 100.3.
That's good advice. Yeah, that's really good advice.
That's pretty good, actually. That was the Eagles.
Yeah. Oh, the Eagles. We should just play all the Eagles records and you've got all your answers. There you go.
Exactly. Hotel California. Not sure how that works in, but anyhow. No,
doesn't matter.
Great track. Right.
Good.
This is Searchlight, the Entrepreneur's Journey on Bay FM 100.3. If you've just joined us tonight, we're talking about pitches, unpacking pitches and valuations to try and get you some money. So listen up, got some great advice.
That's the plan. So we've spent a lot of time talking, you know, we've drilled into a bit about this valuation thing, but valuation is just one part of the bigger picture and the bigger equation. And there's always this issue about, well, what else goes into a pitch and what should be in and what shouldn't be in? Simon, I'll come back to you because, again, this is one you will have inevitably dealt with very day in, day out.
I have a lot of times, yes.
When you're asked that question by a founder, what do you say?
Oh, well, you know, sorry, what, can you repeat the question again?
Yeah, what should be in the pitch? What are the essential elements that need to be in the pitch?
Well, first of all, you know, really, you've got to grab the attention of the audience in the first 2 minutes. If you don't grab the first two minutes, they'll go to sleep and they'll look at their phones and they'll wander off and look out the window and they won't pay attention. So the first 2 minutes are the most critical part of your pitch.
So what do they need to have in that
first 2 minutes? First thing you've got to come in is you've got to come in confident. So you've got to walk in and you say, my name is, I'm from company, and we're here to solve this problem. That's your first, essentially your first line. And the second line is then you talk about the problem a little bit. Then you dissect that problem. So imagine, they might use some case studies. So you say, imagine this is Joe and this is Phil and this is Tony and they've got this problem. Very quickly to get the audience to understand what the problem is. And you've got to do that in one slide. So very, very quickly do that. And then follow up very quickly of how you're solving the problem. So this is the problem we're solving. This is how we're going to solve the problem. And then you go through about what, then you talk about how your product solves a problem. And more importantly, be very clear, there's a difference about, I think, and we talk about, is it a Panadol or is it, I can't remember the name, John, where you, is it a panacea or is it going to solve the problem? You know, is it something?
Is it just fixing the symptoms or is it fixing the problem?
Exactly. Yeah, so be very, very clear about that. Mm-hmm. And be very clear to the audience that are you solving the problem or are you just making the pain go away? Because it's very important to understand that, because there's value between the two. Very little bit between them, but they're very clear about that. And then this next step is you talk about is how big the market is. How big is this market? Who else has got this problem? Is it just a local Brisbane problem? Is it a Queensland problem? Is it a Australian problem? Is it a global problem? Because what angel investors are looking for are problems that are global problems, that are a problem that doesn't matter where you are in the world. We might have our own market here, but it may be a problem that they may have in the US or the UK. Be clear about what that global market is opportunity is, because that sets the size of how big the business could be. You know, this is a big problem. This is a big problem, needs to be a problem. This is how we're doing it. And then the next step is you talk about a little bit, a lot of people have found this, get this carried away with this. Be very brief about what your tech does. Don't get too carried away of what your tech or how cool your tech is. Just go into the brief into your intro into your tech. Not a lot, just one slide.
So this is how we've achieved that.
Yes,
this is how we fixed it. This is what we've done to fix that problem. And it can be a very top level description. We usually don't need the low level techie.
No, absolutely not. Yes. We just assume it works.
Yeah, we don't want to know how many lines of code you've written or anything like that.
We don't care how, we just want to know, does it solve the problem and how you do it? Be very succinct and to the point. Avoid jargony words. A lot of entrepreneurs love their products so much that they talk about adjectives and throw their acronyms. Be aware of that. Assume that the audience is, you know, basically got the, you know, they're just starting high school kind of level of communication. So imagine you're talking to your 13 or 14-year-old son. Be very, very generalistic about your words, because most of the people in the audience don't understand the topic you're talking about. They understand there's a problem. And they understand that, you know, from a high-level point of view, that there's a thing you're solving. But be clear about that. And then talk about, after you've briefly described your project, talk about your pricing model. How are you pricing it? What is your target? How you, you know, what is your pricing model? Would that be the right way to put it? You put your pricing model together?
How is everything you've talked about going to be converted into monetary value with customers?
Yes, exactly. Yeah. How are you going to do that? And who's going to pay and what kind of price they're going to pay? And who is the customer who's paying? It's really clear. You have to understand, a number of entrepreneurs come and they pitch an idea thinking that customer A is going to pay it, but they really don't have the capacity to pay. It's really customer B. We've had a couple of those come through in the pitch clinic. But be very clear about who the customer and what they're prepared to pay. Then talk about the global competitors. How close are your competitors to this market? Are there other people trying to solve this problem? How close are they to your solution? And why is yours better than everything else there in the market? And then you sort of talk about what you think your five-year projections are going to look like. What are you going to look like in – what's a business going to look like in 5 years? And people talk about a five-year forecast, and I know a lot of accountants get hooked up about this, like, well, they're not real numbers. How do we know they're not real? I said, it's really about setting what your projections could be. If everything went right in your life, if everything you think you wanted to execute was going to come off, what would your financial situation look like in 5 years? And understanding when you put that out, you also work out where you need the cash during that process of 5 years. You may need look for $1 million, but you may not actually need it in the first year. You may look for it actually in the second or third year. So you have the opportunity to say, right, okay, we'll raise a small amount of money now and raise a lot of money later. And so you've got to look at your financial model. And then you come up to the wonderful question of the ask, which is always
the valuation.
So there's a page called the ask, and generally what we request is we're looking for X amount of dollars at X amount of pre-money or Y pre-money. So what do you mean by pre-money? Is that's the value of the business before we put the money in. So a lot of people come up when they pitch the idea. Say they come up and say, "Oh, I'll give you $200,000 for 10% of my company." And then we have to think about that, what that means. What we're really looking for is we're looking for the value that it is today before we put the dollar in. So very, very clear, because it makes it very consistent in terms of making it so that the investor knows what the valuation of the business is. And then you've got to have a slide on what are you going to use the money for? What are you going to use the money for? So talk about how are you going to use the money? Now, the thing about angel investors is we want to see growth. We want to see this business go boom. We want to see it go really fast. So what we'd like you to see is using the money for marketing activities to grow the business. So you take, like, you've got an MVP and you've got a sticky tape together and you've just got a few customers and you've gone, oh, I've got a few customers now. I'm going to have to spend some more money getting it right. No, not necessarily. What you want to do is you want to sell some more of those tape together packages and use the profits from that to reinvest back into develop the product. So what we'd like to see is we'd like to give you, the entrepreneur, some money for you to go out there and market the jeebies out of the product and grow the market very, very quickly, because that grows the value very fast. And that's the quickest way to grow the value of your business. What's the cheapest money?
The best form of funding is paying customers.
Exactly.
This will be carved on my tombstone.
So get more paying customers. We give you money to get more paying customers. So get those more paying customers. And I guess at the last slide is, and a lot of people find it very difficult, is who's going to buy your business? And a lot of founders don't actually think about this. I'm going to build this business. I'm going to do this. But how are you going to sell your business, and who are you going to sell the business to? And that's often a very difficult decision to make. But it's very clear to us, because sometimes founders love their businesses too much and they don't want to let them go. And as angel investors, we'll never get our money back. So you have to think about the exit. That's a really good point,
because I think it is hard, especially for founders when they're very much at the early stages and they've got the big vision of everything this business can achieve. And then investors come along and say, well, tell us about your exit. And they go, wow, I'm still working about the rest of it. I get that it's a difficult thing to think about, but it's probably really worth emphasizing about why it is so important to investors, because generally speaking, it's the only way of getting the money back out.
Exactly.
Yeah.
We're there for the long journey. We're there for 5 or 7 years or however long we're in the business, so we want to know how we're going to get our money back.
And it's fair to say that whilst talk about the exit in terms of, well, it could be here, it could be here, it could be here, we know the accuracy of that is going to be very difficult to define because it's so far out. Probably the most important thing about having that in there, though, is to demonstrate that it's on your radar and you've thought about it.
Yep.
We know the accuracy of those statements is going to be very hard to deliver on. But if you haven't thought about the exit, then actually that says to us, you haven't thought about the whole game plan. You haven't thought about the beginning, the middle, and the end. Yeah, and you have to think about the whole game plan, because that's what we need to see as investors. Yeah,
absolutely. And generally, a good pitch will weave a story and take you on a journey. Mm. And if you put a really good story together, and the valuation, because the valuation is like the cream on the crop. If they love your product, they love what you're doing, they love the traction, your early traction you've got, and you give them a good valuation, it's just a big tick. And we there's a saying we used to use called back the truck up. You remember using that terminology? There was a room full of investors would just line up and give you money. But we call it back the truck up.
I've seen that happen. Occasionally, not yes. that often, but it I've seen it happen.
I've seen, yeah, well, we've seen a room full of 40 people and 40 or 50 people, and 50 people just stick their hands up. Yeah, yeah. If you can tell a good story at the right price, you'll get the investment that you're looking for.
I can't resist throwing in my other line about that I do often say to founders pitching is the other real reason we get you to pitch is we want to see if you can sell. Yeah? Because this is one of my little bugbears, is that really you've got to be able, if you can't sell your product or service to the end users, you know, part of the acid test of that from our perspective is, can you sell the concept of your business to us? Yeah, if you can sell that to us, then the chances of your being able to sell your product or service are very high. If you can't sell it to us terribly effectively, then yeah, we're a bit more worried.
Which means it still comes down to the financials.
Yes,
selling is about financials. You know, the sale of a product.
I would take issue with you on that, because actually no, selling is about building a relationship and meeting a customer's needs. Yeah? That's what selling is about.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? The financials are the product of that that flows from the end of that process. Yeah?
But they go hand in hand.
They go hand in hand, absolutely. But I mean, selling is a people business. Yeah? Selling is about getting someone to do something, sign an order, press a buy button. Yeah? It's about invoking and causing action in another human being. That's a people skill, yeah? And it's the same with getting investment, okay? You want an investor to say, yes, I'll sign the investment check. So you've got to be playing to the person. You've got to be playing to the audience. Yes, money flows out of that process. And yes, money is very important. But, you know, to think of sales as just being about money, I think is not quite giving it the credit it deserves. But there we go. On that point, I'd
just like to quickly add that also the fact is you're selling your vision, because we talk about the jockey, the horse, and the track. We won't go into details of that.
Yeah.
But basically, when an investor makes a decision, he usually looks at the founder, and his confidence and his belief and his ability to sell is important, but his vision. His vision, a dream of where he wants his business to go.
Or her. Just
or her. So, yeah, yeah, his or her. But the vision of where that business is going to go and how it can how he or she could rally the followers of that business and the staff to that cause. And you find that the great businesses have great leaders, and they're the ones that can take them to that billion-dollar valuation. It's that great leaders, inspirational leaders, that can drive their business into the future. And that's kind of what we're looking for as well.
Good. So Sharon asked the question of what to go. Is that a comprehensive enough answer for you?
I think that was pretty darn good.
Okay.
I've kind of done it
a few times.
But there is somewhere someone can go if they want to look up some of this stuff.
Yeah, so angelloop.au. If you go to angelloop.au, we have a lot of resources available there, not only for investors, but for entrepreneurs as well. We have a pitch deck there and a term sheet. And there was somebody's asked me to upload a valuation calculator, but I'm hesitant about doing that.
Oops. That could be very dangerous.
But if there's some resources there on the website for you to have a look at.
Say it again.
Yeah.
Angelloop.au.
You jumped on that one. Absolutely.
So you have that available. And you also see where our little offices are. So there's a big list of offices all around Queensland, New South Wales and Victoria.
Speaking of, just before we move on and have a chat with Stephanie, Angels have got a meeting next week?
Yes, we do. It's at Logan. We have our bi-monthly meeting at Logan. 1 month we have it here at Redlands.
Yep.
With wonderful John, who's no longer, who is Greg, of course. Greg is now the new president.
Yeah.
We have a wonderful group at Logan, at the Go One offices at Logan. They're the Logan's unicorn, as they would say. Now with $2 billion, apparently, they tell me.
Oh, wow. That's great.
So it's a very big show.
So if someone wanted to come along, as an example, someone's just got a great idea, start up, and thinking, maybe, what can I do? Are they invited to come along to an angel night, and if so, how?
Yeah, absolutely. You're allowed to come. All our angel meetings are open to the public. It's part of our charitable charter. Angel Leap is a charity, registered charity in Queensland, and you're allowed to come and participate. Or be a member of the audience. You can't pitch yet, but you have to be screened. But you can at least come along and watch and see what goes on. If you go to the angelloop.au website and navigate through there, you'll find a local group that's near you. For instance, Logan Angels is loganangels.net.au, I think it is. So if you go to loganangels.net.au, you'll see that you can go through their main webpage and register to go to Go One.
And we've also got one for the Redlands.
Redlands, yes, redlandsangels.com.au. The details of the next meeting aren't up on there yet. I think it's going to be early in November.
Yeah, it's the first Monday of November.
First Monday of November, but the details aren't quite up there yet.
If you go to angelloop.au, it is.
Oh, is it? Okay. Yes, all right. You're one step ahead of the Redlands Angels website. Hey, there we go. Fantastic. Simon, thanks for that. That was a very comprehensive answer to Sharon's question.
Yeah, that was a very... Yeah.
No, it was fantastic. Thank you. We're going to take another quick break, and we'll come back and have a chat with Stephanie, who's been on the road, and her eyes are still wide open at the moment. I think it's an experience and a half, and we'll find out about that in just a moment. This is Bay FM 100.3 Searchlight, The Entrepreneur's Journey. Should I stay or should I go? Well, that's a very good question. Should I stay or should I go?
Could you stay just right now? Otherwise, I'd have to run around the table and press the buttons as well, and that's too much for my little brain to manage.
But it's also a very good question for founders.
Yeah, I was just wondering whether that's for angel investors to say to founders, should you stay or should you go?
Yeah.
You
know?
Anyway, that's
see, there's thought that goes into the music, because
the answer is you stay. Okay? let's be very clear.
You stay, you pitch, you win.
You pitch, you win. And you make us all lots of money. No, there we go. Anyway, moving on, our next guest this evening is Stephanie Buffinger. Stephanie is a very passionate and crazy off-road motorcyclist. But through this, she's become equally passionate about protecting females around the world from sporting injuries. FemPro produces high-quality, female-designed chest and body protection armour and apparel for impact sports, in-field professionals and for aged care. Stephanie describes FemPro's mission has been to inspire women to feel safe when participating in their chosen sport or profession by developing and delivering quality protection armour and apparel products. Stephanie, welcome. Is that an accurate description?
Yes, I think it's very much so. Brilliant. Very much so. Yes, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Welcome. Great to be here. I've just described the business very briefly, but just elaborate on that a bit. What exactly? Just explain what the products are and what they do and how they work and that. Yeah, what is it you're selling?
So we have designed body armor that females are wearing in their chosen sports or profession to keep safer. And the armour moulds to our body shape.
Ooh.
So it's really soft and light and can fit into every shape or form of a female. With existing armours, they were very hard and flat and hard plastic.
And made for men.
And made for men.
And so therefore a little uncomfortable for ladies.
Not a little, very much.
Very much,
and
right.
So much that you constantly were pulling and shoving, so your mind was not on the task, which then came another level of danger to it. So with our armor, it becomes like a second skin, so you can't even feel it because it's so light. And through your own body heat, it warms the armor up. It's not making you hotter, but it warms the armor up and becomes even softer, so it becomes even more moldable to your shape.
Wow. Okay. And then, but if heaven forbid, then you impact something, that's giving sufficient protection to really prevent those really nasty injuries. Yeah.
Yeah. So when an impact occurs, within milliseconds, the air molecules in the actual armor lock in together. They will absorb the impact force and pushes it back out, just like your airbags in the car. So the actual impact force is very limited to go through to your body, which then obviously creates bone breaking, internal organ damage or displacements, which you really don't want to have. So the force will go back out, which gives you the better protection.
Hallelujah. Seriously, girlfriend, hallelujah.
Yep.
Been on the back of motorbikes, and most bike gear is made for guys, and it's clunky.
Very much so, and you look like a robot.
And you feel like the Michelin Man.
And, you know, we women, we have beautiful shapes. You know, we have boobs, we have curves, we have hips, and we want to show them. I don't want to look like a Michelin Man or a robot when I do my sports. I want to be a girl. And prior to our gear, every time I was talking through my helmet, or because I'm 6 foot tall, I have short hair, and, you know, I'm ex-professional swimmer, so I'm not very petite in itself, and I look like a guy. Now, because I had guy armor on, I really look like a guy, and every time I talked to someone, they go like, oh, there's a girl under the helmet. And it's frustrating. Mm-hmm. Now, wearing my own armor, you can see my boob shape as such, and it feels comfortable, and it's internal, so no one actually can see the armor in itself, but I look like a girl. And not because we don't have any pink, because manufacturer these days, they just take a male armor, put a bit of pink on it, and then class it, this is female. Mm-hmm. Like, nothing wrong with pink. Pink is a really nice color, but pink does not make us females.
And I don't wear a great deal of, you know, pink up here. Purple down the bottom. But,
I just described that Sharon is wearing a white blouse this evening. So Stephanie, so that clearly the problem you're solving issue is tick. Can see that straight away. Mm-hmm. So that's absolutely brilliant. But you are also currently going through a capital raising process for the business. It's still pretty early stages for you. Yeah?
Very much so. Yeah, yep. We raised last year in December, so mm-hmm. we're on our second raise mm-hmm. through Angel Loop, mm-hmm. We've just finished a roadshow last week, which was really great and tiring, but exciting in the same time, because you create some amazing friends, you meet awesome people, you learn each time, you get some great feedback, and in the journey from there just goes more.
Exactly. So you've been sitting here listening this evening to the talking heads. We're all pontificating on about all the wonderful, fantastic, clever stuff that we know. But you're the other side of that equation and experiencing that.
Totally. So how is your pitch deck as opposed to what Simon just said?
Well,
take a deep breath.
How long do you have? Now, about 6 months ago, I obviously came to Simon and said, I'm ready now. Please have a listen. And he invited me to the pitch clinic. And so Simon, John, and three other people were sitting there, and they literally peeled me like an onion. And John scared the crap out of me as such.
He's really a nice guy.
Yeah, I really do like him now.
At the time, different story.
At
the time, I can't say the word, but it starts with B.
Okay, I'm sorry.
For me, he's always say, is take me apart, give me the feedback so I can learn, and I want to learn, and then put me back together, help me get it right so that when we go to do what we need to do, is I'm perfect, or I'm pretty close to perfect, because really you're never perfect as such. But so that was an hour of literally sweating and going like, holy, you know. But it was really great, because my pitch deck at the time was
Sometimes you have to be cruel to be kind.
Totally. Yeah. I totally agree. And I'm very thankful of what you guys did, because if I would have taken that pitch deck on the roadshow, it would have not gotten anywhere. And obviously now, 6 months later, my pitch deck does look totally different. So very thankful.
And I will vouch for that. The flip side of that is I can sit here and say, yes, I do remember your first pitch. And I equally remember the most recent pitch of yours I've seen, and they are chalk and cheese. And you've done a superb job of taking it to where you have. So,
thank you.
So there you go. I'll reciprocate by going, tick, well done. but that's just part of the story. So, you know, in terms of that process that you've gone through in, you know, honing that pitch, getting all those elements of the pitch right, I mean, the valuation thing as well would have been something that you would have drilled into and gone into, and something I think we probably discussed at the very early stage. What has changed for you in that process around valuation, if anything, or is it still where it was?
No, obviously, every founder, every person tends to think that what we have is more value than what we want to give it to. For me, is a high valuation equals ego in itself. When I value my business and I go in front of investors, I want to be able to achieve what I'm saying I'm putting out for the next 12 to 24 months. So if I say my business is valued at $10 million and it's really only three at the moment or two, it's really hard to get there within those months, which then means I'm disappointing myself, but I hate disappointing other people that are putting money into my business. So I rather go lower and a realistic valuation, because ultimately it's like selling a house. If I think my house is worth $1 million, but a buyer only is prepared to pay 500, well, my house is only worth 500,000, not $1 million. So for me is, I struggled at the very start of how do I value my business, because at the time when I started going into pitching and shares and getting money from angel investing, I really didn't have any revenue. I had very little customers as such. So how do I value something? Because we tend to think, I need to have revenue equals a valuation. But as we said before, as you guys said before, there's a bit more to it. So I struggled for quite some time to get that. Where now, 12 months later, or close to 12 months later, I don't struggle anymore. I know where my value is, and Simon has helped me, and Chris as well, to get the right figure for the business that it is worth now. And I'm very confident with our figure that I can achieve that in a very short period of time. And that's, so I rather do small steps and then do a big leap once I have ticked all the things that I wanted to do.
So you're doing the staged approach. So you'd already had some investment money in the very early stages.
Yep.
So you're now doing a second round, effectively, which is going to be for a bit more, for an altered valuation to the first one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The first one, we valued the business at $2 million, where Simon and Chris, they said, I could go to four, but I chose now it's three, because I feel it is a way much more a realistic approach to what was in December to what I have done now. So it's for me is I want to be able to achieve things. Yes, I want to set them further apart, but it's there's no point in putting a big value on it and you can't achieve it.
So that's a bit of a spin on the under promise over deliver thing, isn't it? It's about slightly go for a slightly lower valuation, but be confident you can then deliver against that.
Yeah, yeah? Because just as Simon said, for me it's really important to get the financials from investors, because if I can't, what's the point? Then I have to close the doors, and I don't want that. So I rather give a little bit more away now to get there. It's the same like a lot of entrepreneurs, they don't want to get anyone or give shares away. Now, I rather have 70% of the company and I hit the target instead of having 100% of the company and I have to close my doors.
And being an employee.
Exactly, yes. Mm.
So you've learned that lesson.
Totally. So I had a business for many years prior to starting FemPro Armor, and basically when I finished, it was gone because I created a business that was a job for me. So I didn't agree with what you guys said about the exit strategy, because that was the very first thought of what I had is, how do I exit this business? Because I didn't want to make a job again. I love FemPro Armor. I love everything about it. You know, talking to customers, the armor, knowing that I can help women to be safer when they do something. Because we don't, like, I fall every month easily. But I know I'm safe when I'm falling. So we can't stop falling, but we can minimize the impact of a fall. So I love all that, but I want to exit because I don't want to create a job. That's for other people. So for me, is the exit strategy was the very first of, when do I want to do this? How does it look like? How do I want to exit? And the exit can be in multiple stages. And so for me, that was the most important slide in the whole pitch deck.
So you're in the market now?
I am. We launched early last year, and we have some very good traction, but will increase now with having extra funding.
How do we find you?
On FemProArmor.com, through Angel Loop as well. But we're on social medias as well, so FemProArmor.com.
That sounds great.
That's FemPro. Armor.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, Stephanie will be presenting at Angel Loop Brisbane tomorrow night for our Angel Loop meeting. So if you go on angelloop.org, angelloop.au, and look for Angel Loop Brisbane, you'll see it there under the drop down. You can come and register if you like tomorrow night. That's open.
And go and watch Stephanie pitch with the new improved pitch.
Yep.
So when you were on the road with Simon, unpack that. How was it for you?
It was very draining in one way, but very exciting on the other, because you never knew where you were pitching, what the atmosphere was, who's actually coming. You didn't know your target investors, and I've learned a hell of a lot. I loved the dinners afterwards, so when we at night we pitched, yes, and then the investors came and they had an opportunity asking more questions, and that was really important, because investors, yes, they invest in your product, in your business, but they're investing in you. So if you create a bond or curiosity, it will get them over the line way much better. So it was great. And we had a great troop, you know, Fabrizia, we became friends. I definitely learned all about her pitch. I think I can pitch hers now too. Simon was great. He was always helpful, always looked after us. It was a 100% positive experience as such.
Fantastic. Without giving away any IP, what was the most interesting question that has been presented to you while you've been pitching that took you almost for a backward step, like, oh, hadn't had that one before?
When I started, I went through the Simpson Desert with a bunch of girls, and that's where Miss MXG launched, which then got rebranded into FemPro Armor. So I started in motocross, and then it went through into other sports and then into the professional fields. But it was always about impact sports. So I actually went to the Toowoomba Angel meeting, and one lady actually said to me, I don't know anyone doing impact sports. I don't do impact sports. I don't know anyone in the defense. But we all have grandmas and elderly parents. So I'm going like, yes, that is true. Because we're in three markets. We have the same product, but we're in three markets. So that night I changed my pitch to bring the way I was talking. Like, I say, okay, you might not do impact sports or you don't know anyone. However, we have an elderly parents or grandparents who are in danger of falling, which makes it then real for everyone. So that stood out in that.
So that's two markets. What's your third?
High-risk frontliners, so police, defence and security.
Okay. So with the armour, it's easy to get on and off.
Yes, so when it comes to impact sports, we design apparels according to the injury that sport brings in and then put the armour in place. So all our apparels, they have pillow slips, so the armour slips very easily in and you can take them out so you can actually wash it. And so, the garments in itself look all different. So motorcycling, for example, has different garments than AFL or rugby. When we talk about the defence or the high-risk frontliners, they wear pretty much the same like in impact sports. When we talk about healthcare, we have underwear that our hip armour goes in, and we have them in different variations. For example, because there are different levels of care. So if someone, for example, is bedridden, but because they might have dementia, they might get out of bed. So we need to have underwear that nurses can put on easier, but it has the hip armor. Then we have elderlies that might have bladder issues. So instead of having two pairs of underwears, it's incorporated into the underwear. So, yeah, it's the garment looks different, but the armour is all the same.
And it's not bulky?
Not bulky at all, super light.
I've got friends who, with elderly mums, are going to be hearing about this, absolutely. I think that's amazing, and the whole federal government should be getting behind you on this one, particularly for the aged.
Well, particularly with our hip armour, because everything molds to your body, so it becomes quite low profile. So I can literally wear skinny jeans and put armour in it and you can't see it. Where traditional armour are bulky, thick, like a saucer, and it doesn't mold and you can't lie on it because you get bed sores. And that's why people don't wear it, because it's so uncomfortable. And there is no reason for it. It's just we females, whilst we represent 50% of the market or the population, we've been forgotten as such. Because we have so many shapes, it's really hard to cater. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I chose the product that I have, to create something that literally every body type can wear.
You've won me, for sure. Oh, no, I've got jeans at home that I wear on a motorbike and a jacket too.
Chest armour.
No. Yeah.
And that's one of the things we've impacted.
But the jeans themselves, they could stand up by themselves.
Yeah.
They've got that much stuff in them. And literally, I'm walking like the Michelin man. Ugh. Yeah. And the jacket.
But when it comes, for example, with motorcycling, we get taught right from the start, in your jackets we have shoulder, elbow and back. But no one ever talks about the front. Now, 85% of organ displacement comes from the front. Now, a customer of mine who bought after her first accident, she had bleeding on the heart. Not a thing you want to have. Mm. And so many people, injure themselves and they have sternum breaking, ribs, punctured lungs and all sorts of things because there's nothing in the front. And we don't fall onto our backs, we tumble, we go over handlebars. I mean, I hit a couple of times trees. And at the time, I was wearing the traditional male protective garment and I found out, because I don't read labels, unfortunately, that the armor was actually not armor to protect me of an impact. It only protected me from flying rocks from a rider before. So I was horrified that it was actually sold as armor to me, because we tend to think armor will protect you.
And most of the stuff's on the back.
Yeah, so a lot of people, like, you can buy quite an expensive jacket and you take the armor out, and the armor it's actually horrible to think a piece of foam is going to protect my spine. And, and a lot of times it doesn't.
I actually think you've got a fourth market. As soon as the boys hear about this, they'll be going, excuse me, us.
True.
This discussion has actually already been had.
Yeah, because husbands of our customers came to us and said, we want your product for us because they saw the substandard of the traditional armour.
There are parts of the vascular anatomy that do require protection as well.
Yeah.
Yes.
Well, there's a funny thought, you know, sort of they had helmets in cricket before they had boxes.
Mm.
It's like, go figure.
Yeah, there you go. Anyway, there is no doubt that about what the problem that has been solved here. Stephanie is dealing with those. Absolutely fantastic.
You can always
fantastic.
Take a piece of shoulder armour and, you know, it all molds.
Boys, you're out of the loop. This is with the chicks.
Stephanie, that's a wonderful story. And well, not just a story. I mean, the reality of what your business is doing, I think it's absolutely fantastic. Certainly, there's no doubt about, you know, the problem being solved. But also the journey you've been on as an entrepreneur in terms of, you know, starting out with the concept, identifying the solution, and then doing all the necessary steps to bring that to market. And ending up with a damn fine pitch out of it as well. So that's
totally,
really good.
Because
so well done.
There is a difference between ready to invest or investable.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah, that's right. You've got to be investor ready, and you've got it. So I think you've definitely took.
I think next time we do a pitch night on the radio, Stephanie.
But the biggest thing for entrepreneur, I find, is when you go onto this journey, you have to be prepared to pivot of what you think you have, because the way you go into pitch clinics and all that, you know, 12 months of training and mentoring and talking and hearing about, you know, feedback, and there's a lot of feedback you may not like, but it's how I went into this with this process is totally different where I am now. And it's because these people, they do this out of it's not to be mean or anything. It's they want to literally, generally, want to help you and get there and become the unicorn. And so for me is, on my first pitch clinic, is I went in there going like, okay, here there are five people that are well above me of what I know, so I'm going to listen to it. And if it feels right and it sounds right and I do my research, I will change it.
I think the boys would appreciate that is an attitude that you've walked in to all of this, open and coachable.
Hey, if you're not coachable, you might as well stay at home, because as an athlete, for 20 years I had a coach. I did what I was told, and I said, how high would you like me to jump? Because he knew better. He was already doing what I wanted to do. So why wouldn't I listen?
And I think that's one of the things that's got helped get you to where you are, because we do see this. We see a lot of pitches from a lot of different, you know, backgrounds and people with different attitudes and that sort of thing. But actually that ability to be open to being coachable, to be open to taking on board what's been said, is often the key difference between someone who's going to change and adjust and adapt and get there to someone who's very rigorous with their ideas and just will refuse to change. Simon will bear me out on this, no doubt, but I mean, certainly I know sometimes we will look at a deal and the deal will look good. But if we see a founder who we don't think is open to being coached, then we will walk away. Yeah, I mean, would you agree with that? Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. I think there's a number of things, parts of that. You can have great founders, there's often say there's a jockey of the horse at the track. We've talked about that before, but you've got to have a great jockey. If you've got a great jockey that's coachable and listen, then you can, and they will go a long way. But there are some founders who are, they're their own experts. They know everything and you don't know anything. And we've had a couple of those come through the clinic, and you know, and ultimately we've said no, we're not going to help you raise, because simply we don't believe that you will be successful, because you're not listening to what we're trying to help you to achieve.
And I think Chris will certainly have an opinion on that as well.
Oh, absolutely. Like I say, a couple of decades dealing with entrepreneurs, from mad scientists and, dare I say, academicians, to complete introverts who have no idea of how to pitch something, through to the most amazing, accomplished entrepreneurs who are on their third time around. The recurring theme has been an openness, willingness to listen, where it made sense to come halfway, and to actually enter things into an open spirit of debate and mutual understanding. And generally speaking, each has got their own special knowledge of how things work, and coming together can just create so much more value.
And don't confuse that with a lack of focus or, you know, strategic clarity about what they want to achieve. I mean, we look for that, but we also look for that tied with an ability to look beyond that as well, in terms of being able to say, to take on board other ideas and maybe reject them. That's fine, that's okay, you know. But I mean, you know, sort of take on board things that other things that need thinking about.
But I find, like, through the pitch clinic, I found you guys never discussed that the product needed to be changed. It was the business model or how to approach going to market or finding the right people for your product. It's never been about the product. And that's where I think a lot of people, like entrepreneurs, are great with the idea to create a solution for a problem, and not everyone can run a business.
But that's, I'm glad you said that, because that's a really key point. Because one of my little things I sometimes semi-jokingly say is, actually, when you pitch to us, we're not particularly interested in your product. And people go, well, but it's all about the product. You go, no, actually, because what you're looking to sell us is shares in your business, and we're actually interested in your business model. Yes, we'll do some due diligence to make sure the product works and the product's good and the product's gone probably crazy, mad, bonkers, or something way that's crazy. But actually, we're buying more than the product. We're interested in more than the product. We're interested in what you're going to wrap around that product to make it a viable business. It's the business model we're more interested in. And initial, certainly inventor-type founders have great difficulty getting their brain around that idea. Look at this great thing I've invented, you know, as opposed to, and we go, okay, yeah, but how are you going to make money out of it?
But that's because they're inventors. They're not business people.
Often, yeah, that's right.
For me, it's like I have absolutely no problem in the near future to actually bring in a CEO, because I know there will be someone better running this business where I can get it to that level of where I know it will go.
And I think you're taking from John's point of view, from John's recent comment. A couple of months ago, we had an entrepreneur come and say, literally on the video pitch, you care more about the valuation than the product that I'm selling. And I said, well, actually, yes, we do. And he was very upset about that. He says, you know, I think my product's worth this amount of money. I says, no, the value of your business is this amount of money. So there's a difference between the value of your product and what we pushed the business at, and that he was not very happy with that, and that didn't end very well.
Good advice. We'll be back in just a moment, and we will run through John's list of the do's and don'ts, or more to the point, the don'ts of pitching.
Common pitch. We'll have to do it really quickly, but yes, we'll
love
do it
to
after
hear that
break.
One. We will. This is Bay FM 100.3 Searchlight, the entrepreneur's journey.
Broadcasting live today.
Station sponsor.
This is Bay FM 100.3 Searchlight and the entrepreneur's journey, and we're getting close to the end. So, John, you made us a promise early on that you're going to give us the don't of pitching.
My list of most common pitching fails, which is a bit long to do at this stage of the evening, but we'll go through it really quickly, and I will ask for the panel's collective opinion on their validity, and they can do that by yays or nays, as the case may be. So this will go breakneck speed, okay? Because there's lots covered in a short time. So most common pitching fails. Number one. Pitching the product, not the overall business model. Where have we heard that before this evening?
Oh, a million times.
Don't sell us the product. We're not buyers of your product. We are more interested in your proposed business model. Yay? Yay? Do we agree on that?
Absolutely.
We agree with that one. Good. Okay, tick, tick. I'll give that one a tick. Cool. Okay, number two, not being clear about the problem you are solving, or a lack of clarity about the value proposition. Those are highly linked, I think. Yes?
I would say, I'd probably say a bit different. The first one is definitely right. Not being clear about what the problem you're solving is really the most important thing in the first 2-3 minutes. If you can't explain or articulate what the problem you're solving in those 2 minutes, you might as well pack up and go home.
True enough.
Absolutely.
Good. Okay. Number three, overly optimistic valuations. Funny, this was done, I wrote this back in March, okay? This was done for an earlier program. Overly optimistic valuations based on unrealistic forward projections. B, investors want to buy in at today's value in the expectation of tomorrow's uplift. They don't want to pay tomorrow's valuation today! Exclamation mark. Yes, we agree.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah,
ticks for all of those. Okay, yep. Tick, tick, tick. Thank you. Number four, overly pessimistic valuations. We don't want to see founders diluted out too early.
Yeah.
Yes, I've seen that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I've seen that, actually.
I've seen that.
We would generally try and talk them taking less
money. In fairness, I haven't seen it in recent years. I've seen it some years back. But that's, yeah, we won't go there. But I have seen it happen. I think they've learned. But very occasionally, it pops up and it's really sad. So it's not common, but it does happen occasionally. Number five, not offering investment in the top level stroke IP holding entity or... the founder has significant other business interests.
Totally.
Yes, agree with that? Okay.
Yeah, the founder has to be embedded in the business.
Embedded in the business, absolutely.
Okay. If they've got two or three businesses, there's only one of the businesses, you won't get investment.
And just once in a blue moon, somebody comes along and says, and then you say, yeah, but that's a sub-entity of this other entity. No, we don't want that. There we go. Okay. Number six, asking too much investment up front when a phased approach would be better.
I think you've covered that.
I think we've covered that quite a bit this evening. That's pretty good. Number seven, asking for too little investment. If it needs more, ask for more, or phase it.
You always want to ask for a little bit more than what you actually need as such, because you never know how long it's going to run off the investment that you're asking. You know, like, let's say you want only 50, but you might want to ask for 100K.
Yeah, well, I think this is more about what Simon was speaking to earlier about if you need a large amount, then if you can phase it, then chunk it down, break it down.
And sometimes the DD team will actually say, well, you're asking for too little amount of money.
Yeah.
They say, look, you really should be asking for a little bit more money to get you to the next milestone. So they quite often would say, hey, go out to the market and see if you can get some more.
Okay, so we're ticking that one? Good.
Yep.
Okay, number eight, this is what I love particularly, not being across the numbers. If you're pitching, you have to know your numbers. Agreed?
Agreed.
Totally. Right. Absolutely.
Well, we've had a lot of discussion, particularly with accountants don't make very good entrepreneurs, I tell you that much. Because they get very fixated about the numbers. I remember having an argument with an entrepreneur about the numbers. She said, well, the numbers don't mean anything. And he says, well, no, it means, you know, as we talked about. And he said, well, they don't mean anything. And some had a lot of discussion about that.
We'll save that one for a debate with our
That's a tough decision, that one. Anyway.
Number nine, not having done enough market research. So you need some evidence there will be sufficient demand. Yes?
Totally.
Absolutely.
Sure.
Ideally, have sold the product. So ideas.
You got some traction.
Yeah, got some traction. Yeah, you got some.
No, no
got some
point
revenue.
Having a product when you don't have the market to sell it to.
Correct. Absolutely. Okay. Number 10, not putting enough budget behind sales and marketing costs. So not being clear about how you're going to sell the product or service and the build it and they will come approach just does not cut it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. Investors want to see, they want to put their money in, they want to see you grow the business, and that means get more sales.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And look, coming from in many parts of my career, sales and marketing background, people just don't give enough thought to the go-to-market strategy.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
And the time.
Absolutely. Number 11, not being clear about why you need the money or exactly what you will spend it on. Be clear about the application of funds, to use the technical term that we use. Yes,
agreed. Be very clear. If we're going to give you some money, tell us what you're using the money for.
Absolutely, that's right. Number 12, making statements that are not 100% true or cannot be verified. Do not say you have a patent if you only have a patent application, for example. Yes?
Yes, and sometimes be very careful. Be careful about what you're boasting about your product, because there usually is a domain expertise in the room. And sometimes you can make some bold statements that aren't necessarily true. Mm. And if you push the wrong button on the wrong angel investor, they will rip you apart.
No, we wouldn't.
Yeah, well, I've seen it a number of times.
Oh, sorry, that's Stephanie's in the room. I forgot. Okay.
Sorry, Stephanie. But I mean, pitch the truth. Pitch what you know. Don't pitch what you think you know.
Yeah,
John only pulled me apart of other reasons, not because of that point.
Oh, we won't get there. Anyway, number 13, not the founder not doing the pitch or at least not being present. It raises doubts. That's what I've got on my list.
I haven't seen that one in quite a while.
I would be...
Really?
I'm on the fence on that one.
Yeah, the fence.
I think I'm on the fence on that one. Generally, the somebody from the management team who can present the product very well can get, be across it. But if the founder's there, present's great. But sometimes the founder may not be actually be there because they might have other commitments. So we've done a lot of pitch events with. We've had you know. Someone from the management, from the team there, but not necessarily the founder.
I guess that's coming more from the point of view of you're backing the team and I want to see the team and I want to see who's leading the team.
Yeah.
But, hey, okay, all right, I'll allow a slight caveat on that one then. Number 14, not having taken relevant or appropriate steps to protect your intellectual property.
That is a really hard one. That's a hard one. Steph, you've been asked this question a zillion times.
Yes, and that was the one where John ripped me apart.
Did I? Oh, right.
Yes,
I can't remember.
You did. Yeah.
But I think it's not having taken relevant and appropriate steps. Because sometimes it's relevant and sometimes it's... there'll be occasions where it's not relevant and it's not appropriate. That's okay.
But
if there are, then they need to have been taken.
I guess, like in my case, it's finding a way of how you can protect it. It might not be quite as straightforward because there might have been an existing patent and
absolutely,
all that.
Yeah. It could be. I accept that. But I think the key thing there is if there's a protection mechanism available and you haven't used it.
Oh, totally.
Then that's a fail in my opinion. Number 15. Assuming that if the investors don't get it, that's their problem, not yours. Never say, but you don't understand. Yes.
Agreed.
Are we agreed on that one? No, I've got rolling eyes here. Yeah,
debate.
Let's
go into a fisticuffs.
Do not go. So, John, I can tell you this is a true story. I mean, at one pitch event, the actual entrepreneur who was pitching picked a fight with somebody in the crowd, and they were literally two girls were literally at each other's throat, yelling at each other, almost one above that. Like, you don't know what this product is. No, you're gonna. Like, oh my god!
All right,
I had to break them apart, and I said, "That's
okay." Maybe don't come to fisticuffs in your pitch session. Is possibly not on the list. But
you won't get investment if you pick fisticuffs. I'll tell you that much.
And in the last one at number 16, and again we've talked about it, not having some idea about the likely exit.
Yes, we're
agreed on that. Okay, so out of those, out of 16, I've got a score of 15.5. Okay, all right, so that's not bad. I'll accept that. That's all right. I may publish that at some point. Actually, we'll put that up somewhere because it could be useful. Yeah. There we go. So that's it on what to put in your pitch and how to deal with valuation. That's been a pretty comprehensive evening, hasn't it?
It certainly has. However, we still have your last question that we always ask.
Absolutely. So I'm going to move it around very briefly. And the final question being is, so if you were giving one piece of advice to somebody starting out on this journey, what would it be? Simon.
Have a second thought. Think about it. Have a really good think about it. It's a journey. It's a hard slog, a journey. And if you want to be a successful entrepreneur, you've got to get boots and all. You've got to go into it with the full. Don't go into it lightly, because you get caught short, particularly when you go to investors. And if you're not committed to your business, then it's going to be very easy detected by investors. So unless you're really committed to your business, think about whether you're going to start it. That would be the number one thing I would say.
Fantastic. Thank you. Stephanie, as someone who's going through this process now, what would your piece of key upfront advice be?
Not to be scared to ask for help. And in Germany, we have a saying is, be not afraid to pull your pants down and be vulnerable as such. There are some great people out there that genuinely want to help without even getting anything back. So asking for help, who do you know, how can I do this, and just be open, because one day it might be your turn to help someone else.
And there might even be mentors who look really scary but are actually great big cuddly teddy bears.
Totally.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, hypothetically.
And three of the best are in this room right now.
And Chris, what would your answer to that?
I think picking up on what Simon said, don't go into it unless you're fully committed. And I think rounding out a number of things out of today's discussion or tonight's discussion, begin with the end in mind. If you want others to come on the journey with you, tell them where you're going and make it relevant to them.
Cool. Excellent. That's wonderful. Thank you very much indeed. Wow. That's an awful lot of stuff. That's a lot of ground we've covered.
That was a great show.
I'm just going to go around
thank
once
you
more
so much.
And just very quickly thank Dr. Chris Booth. Chris, thank you for coming along. If anybody would like to contact you, how do they find you?
LinkedIn or chris@42ventures.com.au.
Thank you very much. Stephanie, thank you very much indeed for coming and joining us. If a lady's thinking, I need the FemPro Armour, where does she go to? What does she go to?
FemProArmour.com, LinkedIn and Facebook.
Fantastic. That's brilliant.
Or Google.
Or Google. You'll find it. Excellent. Jolly good product. Coming to an outfitters near you soon. And Simon, if there is a budding entrepreneur who would like to know more about Angel Loop, where do they go to?
Angelloop.au. Find a local angel group near you and come along to a meeting and sit in the back and learn.
Fantastic.
Speaking of which, there's Angels tomorrow night in Brisbane.
Angels at Spring Hill tomorrow night. Angels Brisbane, yes. Angels
Stephanie's Brisbane. Pitching.
Yep. And next Tuesday, we will be at Logan, in the Go One offices at Logan. So look for that, Logan Angels, and that should be in the angelloop.au. Search for it.
And Redlands?
And Redlands will be the following Monday.
In a month's time.
In a month's time, yeah. The first Monday of the month of November.
And if you've joined us partway through this entire program, you can always find the podcast, which should be up in the next couple of days. You'll find it on bayfm.org.au and
entrepreneursjourney.net.au.
And we'll see you, hopefully, at one of the pitch sessions very shortly. This is BayFM 100.3 Searchlight, The Entrepreneur's Journey. Thank you very much for joining us tonight. Hope you got a great deal of value out of it. And I hope you're successful in your own startup. This is BayFM. See you in a month.
Good night.
Searchlight on BayFM 100.3.